Thanks for joining me for another episode of the Fantasy Force podcast. I'm back at it again with one of my favorite guests, Chris Chung of FakePigskin.com. Chris, how's it going today?
I'm doing well, Dandra. It's good to be back again. Good talking with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't want to bury the lead on where everyone can find you on Twitter. It'll be at FFDynasty101. Chris is always tweeting out great stuff for the Dynasty community and, you know, daily takes on players. Always fun to see not only the tweets, but the responses he gets, because Chris has a pretty solid following. He tweets out something and he gets a lot of people talking. So I think, you know, if you're crowdsourcing stuff and you want to see how a variety of people think, Chris is definitely one of the best follows for that.
Oh, thank you very much for that. Twitter has been such a great community to have people to talk with year-round about football. I'm really happy to have stumbled upon this community, and it's really grown a lot. But yeah, it's the followers that make it, just pretty much like a fantasy team. It's the owners that make a dynasty team, not the dynasty game itself that makes it fun.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, what I want to do today, because I feel like this will get kind of lost in all the chatter if we wait a month or so to do this. I want to talk about things owners should be doing to prep for their drafts. And you had a couple of insanely good articles on Fake Pigskin, and I'm going to include them in the post for the podcast. I'm going to have the links for both of them up. And one of them deals with tiering, which I think everyone should do, and average draft position, ADP. And I want to start with the ADP one first. The title of the article is already perfect. Throw ADP out the window. And this is wonderful. Everyone should see the image for this too. I can't stop laughing every time I see it. It's just a computer flying out the window, but it tickles me. I love it.
Thank you. The image was actually handpicked by the site owner of Fake Pigskin at Regan Yant.
I love Regan.
He saw the title and immediately thought the perfect picture to put in. I was like, oh, go ahead, man. And he picked the perfect one to kind of highlight what I'm trying to convey in this article, yes.
Yeah. It is wonderful stuff. And I want to go through a lot of the reasons you think people should throw ADP out the window. And one of the ones that I want to talk about first is that, like, you put it at the bottom there. It was your closing point, and I think it's super important. And just to switch it up, so this isn't like a read-along podcast, I'm going to bring that up first, which was that ADP limits owners psychologically, that you kind of get glued into people for certain rounds. And to tie this into your first point, it's that you use Jay Ajayi as an example, that if he's going in the seventh round, that's the average. Seventh means he's being taken in the sixth, and the fifth means he's being taken in the eighth and the ninth. So why do we get so kind of stuck to these numbers that we seem to think all of our leagues are going to go by ADP and just be average?
I think this brings in something that ties in well with my background as a counseling student. I'm kind of picking up that some of the process that I myself went through a lot when I was playing redraft, when I started Dynasty. Just the draft of it, you see a lot of people focus heavily on the ADP listing. I've played in ESPN, I played in CBS, Yahoo, whichever mainstream site you can think of. It changed my internal processes every time I look at the ADP list. It's like, I can't reach for this guy. I like this guy, but his name isn't going to come up until maybe two rounds later. So what I find myself doing is not wanting, there's this imaginary audience that I think I kind of mentioned in the article, where we mm-hmm. believe that people are nitpicking every single one of our moves, and that we are aiming to please some sort of imaginary owner, trying to avoid being embarrassed, trying to avoid being laughed at. But at the end of the day, when you pick according to ADP, you lose out on your own player. You get upset that you picked a guy that you don't even believe in. And it kind of, what I find is, it robs you of both the chance of building the team that you want, also, but also robs you of just believing in your own processes.
Right, and I think that's such a big thing, is to be confident in your picks. I'm of the, you know, the, if he's not going to be around by your next pick, I don't mind reaching, you know, 10 or however many slots to get a guy. For me, that's the biggest thing. That's my school of thought there. And ADP kind of does factor into that. We always, you know, as drafters, whether it is dynasty rookie drafts, a dynasty startup, redraft leagues, we always want to feel like we're getting good value out of our picks. And that's where I think ADP does freeze a lot of owners. And, you know, you say in the article, if you want an average team, then you have to draft according to ADP. But if you make a splash, I think you know, in addition to building the team you want, you throw other owners off of what you're trying to do. If I've reached a round or two for Marvin Jones, that seems to be a guy that I find myself kind of reaching for a little bit. I know even in the Dynasty League we're in, he was the main target of, you know, who I was trying to work out in a trade with you, and I got him. I feel happy about that. I will reach for Marvin Jones because, you know, according to ADP, he's supposed to go in one spot. I like him a little more than that. I'm one of the owners that is dragging that ADP up, and it's important to note that there are guys in your league who are going to love people and who are going to go this extra round or two. So it's just, I think it's very overlooked by people that, you know, you say, well, this draft is awful. This guy's ADP isn't for the fifth round, and he just went 312.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that one of the bigger reasons why ADP is limiting is the sense that people, or I imagine that people don't really think about how this ADP is constructed, and I hope I have covered that in the article. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things that explains that goes into an ADP. Most of them assume it's a standard 12 team, maybe PPR, but more or less that type of format that a lot of people play, but they don't consider the scoring. They don't consider how people decide to build their team once they have X, Y, and Z player already drafted. That's why I'm taking another player and I'm going to mess around with the whole average draft position. So there, a lot goes into building an ADP. I'm not saying it's pointless or useless to look at it, although the idea is that you have to kind of look into what goes into making this ADP and how you can make it useful as a tool rather than as a guide for trading, as a guide, like a sole guide for because X player was taken ahead of that player, I will trade this for you. This let me give you a concrete example. I think I put it in there, but say Blake Bortles, mm-hmm. Because he was drafted ahead of Jameis Winston. I'm guessing that's what the ADP stands right now. I'm not even sure. That means I can trade you Blake Bortles for Jameis Winston straight up. It doesn't work that way, not mm-hmm. all the time, and that's why I get the sense that people are trying to find the least amount of thinking possible in using an ADP.
Right. Yeah. And it is more guide than Bible, I would say. That it's where I start on things. And mostly for me, it's where I start to make sure I'm not insulting an owner with a trade offer. That I'm not throwing out, you know, Devin Smith for Jameson Crowder. I'm just guessing that there are probably a couple of rounds between the two of them at the least. So it's just where I start to get a context of the type of players that are around there, whether or not it's, you know, kind of maybe high bust potential guys like Doriel Green Beckham, or if I'm finding kind of steady ground with guys like Jarvis Landry. So for me, that's how I do it. I look to get a sense of the people that are around there, Now, you do mention the normal distribution curve in it, and that, you know, for everyone who saw that and got a headache like I did, it's just to say that there is a bell curve to everything, that's how ADP is constructed. It's taking the high point in the bell curve, and you say I'm trying to look for it specifically in the article. Your draft is only one data point under the normal curve, and I think that's how a lot more people should be looking at it. That you don't want to consider your league as average. That, yes, you know, everybody's going to do a little something different. No one wants to be in an average league. I think that's something people should be a lot more aware of when they're drafting, is that, you know, if a guy has a seventh round grade like Jay Ajayi in your article, that, you know, you can't lose your mind if he's gone, you know, sometime in the fifth.
Right. Absolutely. I think that's the perfect way of how you describe it, and I'm glad, even though it gave you quite a bit of a headache to try to figure out what I'm trying to convey there, the point was still made that, yes, looking at the curve, your draft is only, I probably should have put dots under the curve so you can kind of visually see how, where your draft fits in this normal bell curve. Yeah. And a lot of times people have to know that ADP is made up of mostly mock drafts, maybe sometimes real drafts, but it still isn't going to fit perfectly for your league, for your specific format, for your specific owners, and etc. There's a lot that goes into it.
That's right. And I think my fantasy league has a way to sort through to see if ADPs, to see if you're getting them from all drafts, just mocks, or you know, actual league drafts. And I always think the actual league draft is just a much better option to follow, because not that I'll use it for all mock drafts, but in mock drafts I'm mostly trying out different techniques to see what type of team I get to see. Am I really happy with the zero running back team, or am I happy with zero running back up to this point? Can I go quarterback early? Can I go, you know, robust running back? Yes. So I think we find a lot of people doing that, and that will drag thing, you know, you'll have a lot more outliers. You'll have more, you know, I would say like third wide receivers, you know, going in the actual third round, yes, which you just don't see too often in actual drafts. Mm-hmm. Now, to go along with ADP, and you did this specifically for the rookies. This was your other piece on Fake Pigskin. It was all about tiering. And I just want to say, I think everybody should be tiering at this point. If you are a dedicated fantasy owner, you need to be tiering, because it just makes drafting a lot easier. It makes weighing two players against each other a little easier. And you did it really great, because you ran an overall tiering system. Your top 10 upside guys, top 25, 60, and your waiver wire taxi squad. You broke it down in that fashion, and you also did it by position, the further breakdown there. And it's just it's a very well done, streamlined look at things. And as someone who believes in tiering, why do you suggest tiering over rankings?
I think this ties in well with the ADP article. There is a psychological, cognitive, I'm trying to avoid using too fancy of a word, but there's a streamlined process in our mind that we try to make decisions, which rankings, things are sorted more in a linear type of form. So you see names like this player will be behind that player, and then you kind of look into that and make a assumption that they are, because this player is above that player, I should value that player higher than the players that are below him. Whereas in the tiering, I usually try to, and it's hard to capture it in an article, but I put them all into a bubble of sorts. Their name's going to float around. They're going to, they're not going to make you believe that because this player is positioned somewhere that it should be valued more than the other player, but they both possess the same type of high upside as well as the same floor. So tiering will help you figure out which players you can pick and which players you can let go, and give yourself also a very a visual representation. Again, I'm a very visual person, so visuals are what I'd go for. A visual representation of players that belong in which tier, and it's across positions. And I'll hope to release an article later in the future that really shows what I do in a big board. I did believe I released one last year, but I'll try to do it again this year, where you will see that I value this quarterback the same as this tight end, and I put them on the same line, so that then that way I won't have to consider, because I rank them, that this play, that the quarterback is higher than the tight end, so I'll pick the quarterback first. But that at that point in the draft, I can see if I'm already set at quarterback, then I'll go for the tight end because they're worth equally the same. It's really, I'm trying hard to verbally kind of explain the process of how this goes. But for me, again, tiering comes back to, I don't have to feel like I'm reaching for a player, or that I'm not dependent on how things are sorted, how they are sorted for me on a website or on a piece of paper.
Right. And you're absolutely right. Tiering, and that's why, these articles are definitely going in the post. Tiering is such an interesting thing to explain verbally, because you have a paragraph inside here of why you have the tier board over the ranking, and that explains everything quite well. And I will say, tiering is one of these things that I do so I have a level of comfort when I'm drafting. Right. That, I can use our Dynasty League again as an example. I think I was stuck with the, 107 or the 106. Whichever one it was, I hated the drop-off that I kept getting at that spot, because things were fairly predictable in an active league, that it was going to be, Zeke, Treadwell, Doxson, Coleman, and Shepard were all going to be off the board, and it was time to decide between someone like CJ Procise, Will Fuller, New Orleans' Michael Thomas was off the board as well, because he would have been who I would have picked, LA Rams' Michael Thomas ended up being who I went with, and it was because I tiered. I had no problem reaching however many picks, because I had him inside that tier. I wanted to go wide receiver over running back, as much as I love Procise. And he ended up going a pick or two later, so it was good to know that at least my tiering was on point there. But I think tiering is exactly that. It just, for me, it puts me at a very specific level of comfort. And I do it especially as useful as I found it in Dynasty. I tier a lot for the few keeper and redraft leagues I'm in, because I feel like it makes things a lot easier for me. And exactly like you said, having a quarterback and a tight end in the same tier, when you evaluate your team up to that point in the draft, you say, do I need the quarterback? Do I need the tight end? How far, do I have anyone else? Do I have multiple tight ends in this tier, or do I just have one? Do I have multiple quarterbacks in this tier, or do I just have one? It's a way to look at how you value position scarcity to do that.
I think you put it in a very much better point than I tried to explain it. But yes, I'm trying to capture all those elements, the comfort, the understanding of scarcity. Everything can be pretty much captured in a tier board. When after you cross off your names, you'll see who is left, who you can reach for, who you can wait on, what position, and all of that. I find that in traditional rankings, it's very difficult to capture all of that. because everything is sorted from top to bottom, and you follow that top to bottom kind of flow.
Right, and you're absolutely right that the visual is such a huge part of it, because I think how we think when we draft is the same, you know, how when we have to click the pull-down menu or when we have to look at the row of names, sometimes you're just going left to right, top to bottom, and it's so hard to not do that. And I feel like tiering really does that. And what I will do, and I don't know, you know, I'm not certainly going to recommend this for everyone, I will tier, and then I will position rank within the tier. I will go through and I'll say, well, in this first tier, I have 7 wide receivers and 3 running backs. Here are my order for the wide receivers. Here are my order for the running backs. I don't necessarily intermingle them, but I like to take a look tier by tier. How many of each position do I have? What can I, you know, how can I shape my draft? If all of my tier 1 wide receivers, save for one, are gone by the time I'm picking in the first round, I know I got to get that wide receiver, because maybe I have 6 or 7 running backs in my second tier as opposed to the 3. I can grab my top tier wide receiver, and then I can go and kind of construct my team from there. I think tiering really helps throughout a draft.
Mm-hmm. And you're on point about that, and I find it very useful. I'm glad to see a lot of people are starting to use that IDP. It's a very popular way of sorting things in IDP, because, again, in that realm, it's not very clear-cut who is ahead of who, and you're trying to figure out who's going to succeed in a certain scheme or how they put up production. So that idea probably did come from the IDP side, the people who are in the IDP realm. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to bring it over to make it more mainstream, and hopefully in my next experiment is just to do exactly kind of what you're kind of talking about. I will cross position tier, and you'll be able to see a good representation of Adrian Peterson falls in the same tier as maybe Mike Evans in a redraft kind of thing.
Right, and that's such a... That's such a key thing, I think, for the redraft community, is having those cross-positional, you know, same, you know, tier occupations. I'm almost certain I got the wrong word there, and I'm going to end up going back for it. But putting all of that together, I think, as helpful as it is to do for the rookies, for all the dynasty people, tiering has always put me much more at ease with, you know, with redraft and keeper leagues. That I feel, again, it's all about comfort. Just going through and feeling confident going through my draft, and you know, being able to go through and construct your own tiers. Which I think, again, if you're a dedicated owner, you should take the, you know, 20-30 minutes, you know, wherever, at work, you know, skipping out on what you're doing at the moment, and just jotting down and tiering guys, because as you go through a draft, you'll see it, and this can tie into what, you know, Leo does with his notebooks. You can see, like, hey, I value this wide receiver way more than anyone else because he's in my second tier, and guys out of my third and fourth are getting drafted. So it's a good way not only for you to go through your draft, but it's a good way to see how other drafters are evaluating talent.
Yes, absolutely. I think that is a good example of last year was Allen Robinson. He was in my 4th round tier, which I know the rest of my leagues do not follow Matt Harmon, so they have no idea that Allen Robinson is worth that much, and I'm okay with just taking him right there in the 4th round, or maybe the 5th round, because I know someone is not going to reach as high or isn't as high on him as I am. So those kind of things really help fold my team, and I find this comfort in using this tiering system in redraft, and I'll think of a way to make it into Dynasty, because I know that Dynasty is my first and true love.
I ended up grabbing A-Rob in my home league, and seeing Harmon's breakdown was a big part of that. And I specifically like about, your article here is that when you look at the overall tiers, you have the guys draft round in the NFL draft next to them. So you can look through, and I think evaluating, you know, the NFL draft round is something that we're slowly catching up to as dynasty players, that can't totally be ignored. As much as we love someone and as much as we hear about, you know, the Rams, Mike Thomas, he was a 6th round pick. I think he still belongs in that second tier where you have him, but it's important to note, you know, who's around him and how the NFL valued other guys that went, you know, in and around where he was. So I go through these and I specifically start to use these for your third tier, your top 60 upside guys, because you do still find some pretty solid values. That there's, you know, Kenyon Drake out there, and if you can get him by the time everyone off of your second tier is gone, you grab Kenyon Drake and you feel pretty great about it. There's Braxton Miller, who went in the 3rd round, DeAndre Washington, who went in the 5th, that there's value to be had out there. And I think that's something that I feel is overlooked quite often when we get around to rookie drafts. You know, so many people have heard so much about these prospects already that it almost doesn't matter to most people where a guy actually went in the NFL draft. And I like that I can see this. It's a visual representation of, you know, this is a guy I have in my third tier, but an NFL team spent a 3rd round pick on him. So I feel pretty great.
Yes. Yeah. Again, this requires a bit of a work in the beginning to kind of go through your own process. You have to understand the context, and context is big in a lot of these, and which is a missing point, missing in a lot of the explanations of rankings, whether it's doing rankings, tierings, or whatnot, trading, trade questions, all of this. Context plays a big role, and we don't want people to forget that, hey, I might like this person, like this player, much higher than the rest, but how does the NFL see them? How much of a role will they get, opportunities, because of the decision makers? I'm not the decision makers. If it was up to me, I would put like CJ Process and let him start ahead of Rawls. Let Rawls just heal up and vault him there. But the reality is, we're not decision makers. We're just making our best guess. And we try to reflect our process and our best guess in our own rankings, tierings, and whatnot.
That's right. And, you know, again, talking about that top 60 upside tier is Sherrone Peak, who I had a hard time pulling the trigger on in a couple of drafts. I ended up getting him in one and not in another. And it was just because I didn't, when he came around in the draft that I didn't get him in, I just couldn't convince myself that I was getting the best value out of him, that there were guys that I liked a little better. And for me, that was, you know, getting Braxton Miller. And part of that is the NFL evaluation of him. Miller went as a 3rd rounder. Peak went as a 7th rounder. And there are reasons for that, you know. And, you know, again, Peak's fall, I'm not going to say was largely injury related, but that played a factor in it to the NFL. It should play a factor in it, you know, with your fantasy team. So the tiering like that, that's where things help me. That as much as I'm a homer for the Jets, and I really loved Peak in pre-draft evaluations, you know, tiering helped me keep a level head going into that and saying, there are just better players here right now.
Right. And that, you know, despite us saying that sometimes we don't want the ADP to kind of psychologically force us to not overvalue or undervalue a certain person, the tiering is able to help you. Which player can I take him ahead of, and which player probably should not take him ahead of, because these other guys are probably will probably have more of an upside based on the context, based on team, based on opportunities and all that. Everything, you just have to do your own homework and know where you're most comfortable with as far as where you want to tier a player.
Absolutely. And I think this is where it just gets hard sometimes to look at these things because, you know, I can use an example from another draft, and I know I often try and avoid talking about my specific teams, but I feel like for this particular topic, since it is so, you know, person to person kind of base, that you do have to do your own. The tiering I did in one draft not hurt me in another, but I got two in my head with my tiers. I had Tajay Sharp above, same guy, Peak. And I ended up just waiting too long on Sharp. I would have been comfortable taking him, you know, with a couple of picks I had, and I passed on him because I said, you know what, there's still value out there. I went against my own tiering. I said, you know, if I don't get him, I have Peak, who's the next tier down, but he's my top guy in that next tier. How much am I losing out? And I look at that draft, and I look at the guy who has Tajay Sharp, and I feel like I'm just going to be making trade offers until I get him because I just didn't obey my own tiering. So I think these are those little things that, you know, every owner goes through, whether or not you write about fantasy football or not. I think every owner has those moments where, you know, you get in your head a little bit, and you know, mock drafts are a great way to make sure those don't happen in, you know, real drafts for actual leagues, be they keeper or dynasty. But you know, it happens to everyone, and sometimes it happens in those real drafts and you end up kicking yourself.
Yes. And absolutely, it's nothing hurts more than understanding that your process worked, but you went against it, and then it comes biting back.
Yeah. Now, as a guy who took the time to write this out and have it for everyone, do you find yourself following the process all the time? I mean, I think that's such a key thing, is to just believe in your own process. And I think we get very into assuming maybe we don't have it right, but you know, I didn't obey my own process, and I feel terrible about it. Do you run into that?
Absolutely. And of course, nobody's perfect. No process is ever going to guarantee you any championship or that you will consistently be a playoff team. Mm-hmm. Mistakes are made, and that is how I came to this process that I come to present. I wouldn't come to present something to you that's experimental, that I haven't tried out, or that I don't believe in. It's because I've done through a lot of trial and error that I've come to find that this is the steps that I'm consistently using, and it has been working for me. And now I want to know if it's working for someone else, so I'm presenting it to more people. And a lot of times I do feel that it's beneficial, if not for consistently winning, but at least it'll help people feel very confident in the on draft day, because the process of building this tiering system, taking these steps, requires a lot of repetition in mock drafts, in practicing with what you're going to do in if this scenario happens. It'll build that comfort to you once you head into your draft day. And to this day, I still have a little bit of a butterfly in my stomach come to that big draft day of your main league, the one where you play for pride and prize and whatnot with your buddies. But it's not one where I feel that if someone took my player that I am scrambling or that I don't know what to do anymore. I feel a sense of comfort that I've been through this scenario before because I've practiced with it.
Right. And you mentioned, in addition to comfort, you mentioned confidence. And I think that is huge. Just the confidence of sitting there on draft day and exactly not getting frazzled like that when your guy goes off the board, or, you know, someone you were aiming for goes a little earlier, because you're just able to move around in your tiering. And, you know, as a specific example from, you know, the way you broke down wide receivers, your top 10 upside guys, I mean, we hear, you know, throughout the entire, you know, pre-draft process, and, you know, we go through as dynasty owners, and we think, okay, I'm going to get value through about the 106. And, you know, for a lot of guys, that was in some order or another, Zeke, Treadwell, Doxson, Coleman, Shepard, and Michael Thomas. New Orleans, Michael Thomas. And you're tiering, yours specifically put Treadwell, Doxson, and Coleman in one tier, and Shepard and Thomas in another. So it's important to note as people make moves, and, you know, although I would say a majority of Dynasty rookie drafts are done, there are still, you know, a lot that are waiting, you know, whether or not commissioners have guys, you know, they don't start the draft until everyone's paid up for the year, or if they just like waiting a little longer till minicamp has gone through. But it's important to know for valuation of picks that there are definite tiers that you can't treat, you know, Josh Doxson and Sterling Shepard the same. You know, building those tiers, I think, helps a lot of people in, just like ADP helps with trade values. Tiering helps do that as well.
Absolutely. And I want to hammer the point that just because these are my tiers doesn't have to mean it has to be your tiers. So you're building your own comfort and your own confidence through this process. I could easily see someone having Shepard in the first tier, and I won't blame you for it. This is your guy, you believe in him, and that you believe that he's up there with all the others. I am a little more cautious in that sense because I'm looking for, if I'm drafting a top 10 upside guy, I want someone for sure, regardless of his situation, that he'll have at least the opportunity to break through that ceiling, which I do believe in my first five players. But for yourself, maybe for you, you like Sterling Shepard as much as you like Corey Coleman or Josh Doxson. Go ahead, put him in the first tier, put him in the top 10 upside tier.
Right. In fact, yeah, if we're going to talk personal tiers, I would have had Doxson and Shepard and Mike Thomas in the same tier. I still would have had that order, but they would have been the three for me. I thought, you know, personally, and people have spoken, you know, ad nauseum about this, but for me, yeah, it was Treadwell and Coleman in the top there. So I think, yeah, it's important. I would say the takeaways from, you know, the two articles we've talked about today are that you have to be confident in your own, you know, decision-making process. You have to, if you're going to go out and tier, which I think, you know, we both believe you should, that you have to be confident in your method of tiering. And if you're going to look at ADP, you have to be confident in where you value guys versus their average draft position. It's all about, you know, having your team built the way you want it to be.
Yes. And that is an excellent point to have to be made.
Absolutely. So, it's the same thing that, you know, when we get start-sit questions. I'll gladly help with them, but at the end of the day, it's your team. And I don't mean that as a negative way. I have guys who have asked me start-sit questions, and I go, you know what, I think I'd go this guy. And they'll respond and go, you know, I'm actually feeling, you know, player B. And I'm like, that's perfect. I love when I get those responses because it's not in defiance of me. It's just taking what I've said and saying, I see what you said. I value it. I still like this guy a little better, but I get it now. I have a more sound decision that I've made. And I think, you know, having your own tiers and building ADP into that really helps me in a draft. And I think it should help every owner.
I agree completely with that. And that is the one major thing that I want everyone to take away, is to that for everyone to be able to think for themselves and do their work, and not having to be dependent on anything, not be a slave to ADP, not be told because the consensus like this better than your process, that you should just toss away out everything that you put in the work in. It's more likely that you'll be less convicted about your beliefs when you don't put in the work to whatever it is you do.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm not going to say regardless of outcome, but if I'm going to have, you know, a 2-win season, I would rather do it with guys that I really valued than have a 7-win season just going by ADP. You know, just going strictly by that. I would always rather flame out with my guys than I would want to do average with everyone else's average draft pick.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, if anyone has any more questions for Chris, again, you get at him on Twitter at FFDynasty101. And we're going to see a lot of tweets from a lot of people's favorite writers because the Scott Fishbowl is going to be starting up soon enough. And, I think paying attention to how Chris drafts there is going to be interesting. We always see writers go for new and different ways to kind of build their team. So that's something I'm looking forward to. And I think, if you're a writer, it's so much fun to see and compete with all these other guys. And, if you're someone who just really enjoys fantasy football and you love reading about it, that's something I just would love to follow along and see how, five or six of my different, favorite writers are going through and drafting under this, one set of scoring and circumstances. So there's a ton of fun things on the horizon, a ton of awesome just things for everyone to see, regardless of your level of fandom.
Is this your first year in this?
No, this is year number 3 for me. For 2 years I did not do well either one for different reasons, but I'm in a couple of mocks now and doing all my homework and preparing. I'm actually, anyone who listened to the last episode, I'm in the same division as TJ this year, so that was why there was no Scott Fishbowl talk on that episode. Neither one of us are giving away trade secrets.
And this, we have to really thank and appreciate what Scott Fish has done to make this happen. Every year that this happens, I get really excited because it's a gathering. It's almost like a FIFA for us all, for us Dynasty writers, analysts, fans, whatever it is. And it's making into this huge thing that goes on the Twitter timeline. You'll see this guy made this pick, this guy is being sniped by that writer. It's a lot of fun. It really is. And I guess this ties back to what we put into the beginning, is that it's the players, it's the owners that make a dynasty or a fantasy league rather than just the game itself.
Right. Absolutely. Scott really finds a way to bring together, 480 people, fans and writers alike. And I'm still in touch with a couple of the guys from my first Scott Fish Bowl, So it helps build relationships in this incredible community. So I highly suggest everyone follow along. Again, you're right. A huge thanks to Scott Fish for doing all of this. And of course my fantasy league for hosting it. And there are countless numbers of prizes and everything. And you will see, almost every writer in the league go out and thank the websites that are, putting up subscriptions and special articles and prizes. And Oakstone Ashes, the band, they always throw a little something together. I got a t-shirt from them my first year because I drafted Justin Hunter. Just a ton of fun things going on. There's a ton of great articles and stuff that are going to come out from this, so I think it's something everyone should pay attention to.
Yes. And follow along, hashtag SFB480. It's happening, I believe, in July, right?
Yes, indeed. So that's how we all start to really get in the mindset for everything. So, Chris, thanks for your time. Keep cranking out the good stuff for Fake Pigskin. I highly suggest everyone take a look at your Dynasty Players Adjusting for Redraft Leagues. That article was phenomenal, and I think it's absolutely something we have to keep in mind. I think Fishbowl players need to keep that in mind as well, as this is not a dynasty league. There's no need to go so youth heavy. I think there are countless things we can learn from Chris and his writing and all the research he does. He's really an asset to the community. And I think you can see, again, in the number of people that respond to his tweets and share input, that, everyone seems to notice it. And I think, there, even more people every day should be noticing your work.
thank you so much for the kind work, and please keep listening to the Fantasy Force. I think you're doing amazing work too, and I'm looking forward to some of the things that you have in store for us, whether it's guests or your work. It's people should pay attention to the Fantasy Force.
Thank you, thank you. So you've made it. You've made it through the compliment portion of the show, and I think that's it. I mean, honestly, I don't know if we could be any nicer to one another. I always think every time I have you on, we need to get some stuff to disagree on. So we're going to work on that for everyone. Chris is going to keep coming back on the show. He's one of my favorite guests to have on. Chris, have a good night.
All right. Thank you so much, Andrew.
And before K-Nice takes us out, I'm going to let everyone know that you can subscribe to the Fantasy Force podcast on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And one last time before we're out of here, I'm going to let you know that you can find both of Chris's articles inside the post on thefantasyforce.com. I really suggest everyone click on those, take a look at it. If you're in front of a computer when you're listening to the podcast, it'd be nice to have that as a reference as we go through them. But, you know, regardless of, you know, your timing listening to this, they are just great material for setting everything up. Until next time, peace.